This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by the Fresh Pressed Olive Oil Club. Did you know that olive oil is at its peak of flavor and nutrition right after it's fresh pressed at harvest time? That's why my favorite olive oil is delivered to me direct from the latest harvest, thanks to the Fresh Pressed Olive Oil Club. And now you can try a bottle yourself, normally $39, for just $1, with no obligation to buy anything else. Visit myfavoriteoliveoil.com. In my case, it truly is. MyFavoriteOliveOil.com. MyFavoriteOliveOil.com. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. It's our weekly Q&A with Layla. A much anticipated event by certainly yours truly. And I'm with Layla Mutin, who's our nutritionist in residence, judging by the nice comments we get, one of our most popular podcasts. We interview luminaries in the field of nutrition. But this podcast always gets high marks because you can send us your questions. Send them to radioprogram@AOL.com, radioprogram@AOL.com. And with me is Layla Mutin, who's our registered dietitian, master's degree, certified nutritionist. And welcome, Layla. How are you doing?
I'm all right, Dr. Hoffman. How are you?
Very well, thank you. And before we get to questions, I want to, branch out into a movie review.
Oh!
Okay,
because... We're doing movie reviews.
Yes, we're doing movie reviews.
I understand this one is not a documentary.
This one's not a documentary. This one is not it's not a medical movie per se. It's a popular movie. And it's a movie that many of you are going to go out and see. So, The Joker. Now, a warning. Spoiler alerts may be included herein, but I'll try not to give away the plot of the movie, except for the parts that you pretty much already know about. And I went there and I got really excited because my medical brain kicked in, and immediately I diagnosed the Joker.
Ah!
Ordinary people just watch it for the aesthetic experience, but, I couldn't keep my medical analysis in check.
You were diagnosing the Joker?
I was diagnosing the Joker. So, first of all, Joaquin Phoenix does a phenomenal job.
He's such a fine actor.
He's a really fantastic actor. I remember him as Johnny Cash.
Yeah.
He's had some very fine roles. So in this movie, I think it's no giveaway that he laughs hysterically. He's the Joker.
He
laughs hysterically and inappropriately at times. He has a little card with him that he gives out when he starts laughing, because it's kind of disconcerting. Somebody, you say something that's not particularly funny or, and the person starts laughing hysterically. So he has a little card. It's almost like a med alert bracelet kind of thing where he hands the card and it says, I have been diagnosed with a medical condition that causes me to laugh, or cry uncontrollably. And
does that in the movie?
He does in the movie.
He does. Okay.
So, without naming the condition, but there is such a condition. It's called PBA, pseudobulbar affect.
And pseudobulbar affect.
Now, credit not medical school for teaching me this. I learned this by watching a lot of TV, because there are ads from none other than Danny Glover.
Oh.
The popular actor.
Yes.
And some of you may have seen these ads. Danny Glover's, gets on the screen and, he says, I'm a trained actor. So when, I laugh and he proceeds to, laugh uproariously, it's voluntary. Or when I cry and he proceeds to do a very good facsimile of, he's acting, method acting, and he, cries uncontrollably. It's voluntary. I can put this on through my acting training. But there's some people who have involuntary bouts of laughing and crying. And he launches into a description of a new drug, which is called Nudexta. Now, I've not seen this.
Nudexta.
Yeah, Nudexta. And, I said, what a remarkable drug. This is what is called an orphan drug. Because it's not a lot of people. I mean, how many people do you know who have this condition? Not a lot of people.
No,
it's very
no.
rare. It's thought to be involved with certainly less than 1% of the population of the United States, but that could result in a lot of drug sales. I haven't seen ads for that drug lately. And that may be because the drug is embroiled in controversy, because there was a CNN article about Nudexta, and it's kind of a expose on this. The little red pill being pushed on the elderly. CNN investigation exposes inappropriate use of drug in nursing homes. And this is what happens when a drug is sometimes developed for a very niched application for PBA, pseudobulbar affect. There's diagnostic creep. So sometimes people with other conditions that are not amenable to treatment with this get treated with these medications. It's called off-label use.
Mm-hmm.
And so there are some people with dementia who laugh inappropriately.
Sure.
There are some people who have ALS even who have this. Some people with problems with MS may have this condition.
Interesting.
What they found is that there was an aggressive marketing campaign to long-term care facilities. They say more than half of all Nudexta pills have gone to long-term care facilities. There was a jump of 400% in just 4 years. Total sales of Nudexta reached almost $300 million that year. Now, it'd be one thing.
Wow.
Here's another interesting thing about Nudexta. Nudexta is basically a combination of two very dirt cheap medications.
Oh.
That are off patent. So they're very inexpensive. But how do you revive old medications that are off patent? You create a new drug indication. You get an FDA approval for that particular condition of PBA, that rare condition. And then the drug now can be sold for $1,236 for a month's supply.
That's somebody's rent.
Yeah, and what it is, it's a combination of two old drugs. One is dextromethorphan. Does that sound familiar? Yeah, it's cough medicine.
Cough medicine.
Right.
Cough suppressant.
And also quinidine sulfate, which is actually sometimes, it's an old medication used for heart arrhythmias.
So suppressing a cough and suppressing arrhythmia can equal suppressing a laugh?
Suppressing some sort of brain circuit. That is like an aberrant brain circuit. The thought is that some people have a messed up brain circuitry. It's kind of like a brain version of a cardiac arrhythmia.
Wow.
An electrical. And what was interesting in this movie is that, it's a little bit, the way he acted was, it was a little bit like the Hulk. When he was under emotional stress.
Yes. He became the
like
Hulk.
But in this case, Joaquin Phoenix, when he's under emotional stress, even if it's not like funny.
Yeah.
But it's stressful. He starts laughing and laughing maniacally.
Wow.
You know, and that's actually the way it is with these conditions is that sometimes excitation of the brain, emotional excitation of the brain brings about inappropriate laughter or crying. Certainly crying can be, you win, let's say, you're in love, you're madly in love, you cry.
Yeah.
It's like an emotional thing. Or you win the lottery, you burst out. You laugh, you cry,
yeah.
It's like... It's,
all of it.
Yeah, so it gets to an emotional part of me. So it's interesting movie from that standpoint, studying the way that his aberrant brain works. Now, one thing I want to say about the movie is that the movie's gotten a lot of pushback from mental health advocates. They say that the movie is a poor portrayal of mental illness, is that mentally ill people are violent.
And, oh boy!
Yeah, and I think that's a little too PC because
it's a movie.
We must first of all it's a fictional depiction, but people take away there's a cultural connotation and people take away from that like oh look at that, this person is mentally ill, they're dangerous, stay away from that crazy person, and that's a stigma that is an ancient stigma, crazy people are, but frankly it is true that some crazy people or mentally ill people. Can have violent impulses and act out on them.
Absolutely.
An example of which was recently in New York. There was a guy, and he bashed in the skulls of five homeless people.
Yeah.
He was mentally ill, definitely mentally ill, and he went on a rampage of violence.
Mm-hmm.
Now, It could be that the vast majority of people who have mental illnesses, schizophrenia, are gentle, harmless, wouldn't hurt a fly,
yeah.
and in fact become victims of violence because they are, you know, stigmatized and mm-hmm. they are misunderstood.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a little bit of a riff on that in this movie, is that, you know, Joaquin Phoenix gets bullied in the movie.
Mm.
But the cumulative bullying actually causes him to embark on some violent acting out. I don't think that's
wow.
a secret about the movie. Anybody who knows even the most basic thing about the movie knows that it's got violence in it. So, you know, if you're someone sensitive to depictions of violence or, you know, you
don't go to the movies.
If you've got a, you know, a precocious, you know, 11-year-old, maybe the movie is not for them.
Yeah.
Because that's...
Especially if it's PG-13 or...
Yeah. But I thought it was interesting that there is some, and I've not seen that pointed out, as popular as that movie is with all the reviews of the movie, I don't think anybody has looked into the medical dimension of that. I think pretty soon somebody will listen to this podcast and copy this, or somebody else will.
Yes, and say, hey, Dr. Ronald Hoffman in New York figured this out.
Right. No. No credit. There will
PBA.
Be no. There will be no credit.
The Joker's got PBA.
There will be no credit to me. It'll just be, you know, some, you know, maybe Dr. Oz will do a, you know, a feature on PBA.
Yeah.
That'd be, you know, a good show idea for
guess
the Dr.
this
Oz
condition.
Show. Right, right.
From pop culture
right.
or something.
And, you know, so instead of Danny Glover, maybe they'll sign up Joaquin Phoenix to be the next spokesperson for a new Dexter.
Oh, there you go.
You know, that could be a lucrative.
Oh, that would be appropriate.
A lucrative contract for him.
Yeah, that
you
would
know,
be appropriate.
He's the poster boy for PBA.
Uh-huh.
A pseudo bulbar,
yeah.
affect, which is, a poorly understood condition.
Wow.
But, you know, still, you know.
Wow.
There's a basis in, fact.
You could find it at a nursing home near you.
Yeah, could
the
be.
The antidote,
right.
possibly.
Right.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
Well.
So now, I don't know if we can top that with any questions.
Well, no. We've actually got a comment, Dr. Hoffman,
okay.
about the your most recent article in the Intelligent Medicine newsletter, Veganism, the New Children's Crusade. Well, Jim read it and says, your article showing the excesses and rush to judgment of youth contrasted with the more recent reasoned judgment of the maturing brain was excellent, both in dietary matters and in the larger canvas of important life issues. Aging has its advantages. Thanks for all your insightful commentary. They are so spot on.
Right. Yeah, we got a lot of, I think, mostly positive feedback on that article.
Yeah.
So do subscribe to our newsletter because you'll get those in your inbox every week. And, you know, inboxes
yeah.
being what they are, you can read it or you can delete it.
Yep.
Whatever.
We have an email from George. Dr. Hoffman and Layla, I'm 55 years old, 5'10", 170 pounds, and I've been pre-diabetic for about 3 years.
My pre-diabetic?
Pre-diabetic because A1C is 5.7.
Well, that's not too bad.
It's not bad. It's not bad.
I mean, if it was 5.8, it would be beginning to be on the cusp
right.
of pre-diabetic.
Right. He's just knocking on the door.
5.8 to 6.2,
kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
wait, the stature again was 5'8"? And
yeah, he's 5'10 and 170, and he's a 55-year-old male.
So he's like about 8 pounds heavier than me with the same height.
Mm. Okay. So he avoids sugar and refined carbs as much as I can and exercise every weekend. Here's my question. I have a favorite smoothie. It's got 4 ingredients. Blueberries, about a cup.
Which, by the way, I did, excuse me.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
This is all about interruptions.
Yep.
it's like the family table at Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
It's an endless a sequence of interruptions. Let me finish the story. No. So there's an article in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition about the effects of 1 cup of blueberries per day on precisely this metabolic syndrome.
Ah, yes.
And what they found is yeah. that in spite of the somewhat carby, as long as they're not like super sweetened, it's not blueberry jam, you know, it's like
exactly.
blueberries are rather tart, actually.
They are.
And so it found that there was not an improvement in blood sugar, but there were improvements in other parameters related to circulatory endothelial
yes.
blood flow, and cardiovascular risk.
Yes.
So that blueberries can be protective, even though they are a little carby. Do you know the carb content of like a couple of blueberries?
Oh, maybe 10 grams or so, minusing the fiber of, say, 2 or 3 grams.
So 10 grams, you could still get into that 20-gram threshold.
Who says you have to have a cup?
Yeah. Well, the cup may be what's the threshold for the cardiovascular benefits you may need. Yeah.
But,
okay, anyway.
So his four ingredients in his breakfast smoothie, that's his favorite, are a couple of blueberries, low-fat yogurt. Almonds.
Okay.
And a half teaspoon of cinnamon, which is helpful in actually lowering
blood sugar. Yeah.
So, and he says himself, I use about a couple berries that has about 12 grams of carbs. And, you know, wouldn't the fiber from the berries and the fat from the almonds, the yogurt, blunt the blood sugar response?
Well, it'd be better if there was more not low-fat yogurt.
Exactly. Yeah. And George, you say low-fat yogurt. I want to make sure that it's not flavored.
Yeah.
That it's not vanilla-flavored or some other, or a blueberry flavor that you're adding fresh blueberries to.
I think you don't even know when they get low-fat yogurt sugar in it.
Exactly.
Unless it explicitly says, you know, plain or no sugar added.
Exactly. Or everybody's buying vanilla, but they don't know it's vanilla-flavored, that's what yogurt tastes like. No.
Well, vanilla plain. With sugar.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Vanilla. With sugar. So, George, you know, step it up to full-fat yogurt. Maybe use a little less of the yogurt. The almonds are fine.
Use coconut cream.
Use coconut cream.
That's good. Yeah.
That's a wonderful idea. Mm-hmm. The almonds are fine. And, you know, the cup of berries is fine. Here's what you should do. If you have a blood sugar monitor, you can maybe track that. Or if you're having... Here's the thing. With any pre-diabetes or diabetes, I don't like a very carby breakfast for most people. It basically sets up their blood sugar for the rest of the day.
Mm-hmm.
What I would say to you, George, is instead of having this in the morning, because it may be the carbiest thing you eat, have it a little later in the day, maybe at lunchtime.
Well, there is
sometime after breakfast.
What's this called? The priming effect or the post-meal effect?
Yes, the priming effect.
Which is that breakfast sort of sets the tone for your blood sugar through the day.
It does. If any meal is going to be perfect, and even for those people who are just not as compliant as they would like to be, as they should be, just make your breakfast perfect. That's all I ask. Make that perfect.
Right.
It's going to make a difference in the rest of your day.
Which suggests that IHOP is not an ideal choice for
breakfast. No, oh my.
Right.
IHOP, Denny's, okay, any of those, not a great idea.
Yeah, the 50th reunion, you know, I sort of reunited with people that hadn't seen for 50 years. And one gal who was actually, she was one of, well, it was, I had a bit of a crush on her. But she showed, after the reunion, she showed that she went to get some tiramisu pancakes. Tiramisu pancakes.
Oh my.
Now, that's like double trouble.
Totally.
Yeah. I don't even want to talk about nutrition reunion.
Okay. In her defense.
Yeah.
Special occasion.
Yeah.
But special occasion was the night before, so.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Anyway, tiramisu pancake. Ew. Okay. Was that on the IHOP menu or?
I don't know where where you get that.
Maybe. Okay. So, George, think about having the smoothie later.
It's an Italian breakfast place.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Okay. Opt for the ricotta pancakes next time.
Okay.
Do that next time. Oh, my gosh. George, what does work in your favor is the half teaspoon cinnamon, because that helps to lower blood sugar.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people believe it normalizes blood sugar. It would for a diabetic who needs to normalize blood sugar.
So, but let's talk for a minute about glucose monitoring and, you know, the possibility of that. I'm experimenting with a continuous glucose monitor, which is the Freestyle Libre.
Okay.
Libre. And it's a little disappointing in that it's actually, I mean, you would think, wow, this is this great thing. I can like check my blood sugar every few seconds and I can minute to minute see the blood changes my blood sugar.
That's a lot of data.
I can eat something and see what happens a few minutes later and, you know, and really.
You can perform a self GTT.
Continuously, yes. The problem is, that there is a disparity between a finger stick, and what that gives you. That is like implanted in your arm.
Oh.
It's not reading blood, it's reading what's called interstitial fluid. And there could be a disparity. And it's not uncommon to see, you know, a 20-point or even a 40-point disparity one way or another. So they say, oh, check your finger stick versus that. And so you still end up having the finger stick.
Why bother looking at the interstitial fluid then?
Well, you know...
Because it's convenient?
No, because it's stuck in your arm and it's continuous, you know, because you couldn't... I mean, unless you have an indwelling catheter in a blood vessel,
right.
you couldn't monitor your blood all the time. So it's based on a technology that measures the interstitial fluid. It's also it's rather expensive. You have to keep replacing the reader, although you can use an iPhone and you don't need a reader, and you have to keep replacing the disc. The disc lasts 14 days, but it's not what you think. I mean, what I thought was that I could just, you know, look at it all the time and it would continue.
And just watch.
And it would, or watch even while I was asleep, you have to actually hold the reader to the thing to get the thing.
So it's not like wearing a Fitbit.
Yeah. It's not really continuous. It's sort of semi-continuous and you have to, it's kind of like an alternative to stick in your finger.
Unless you're holding it there all the time.
Yeah, it's an alternative to stick in your finger.
I see.
You know, and so that's a nice experiment if you want to do it.
Yeah.
I don't know if your doctor's going to cover you if you're not a diabetic to get the insurance for it. It can be rather expensive to buy it. It's, you know, it's a little science fair project.
Yeah.
You can see how you react to certain foods.
Yeah.
And you'd be surprised. Some foods may send your blood sugar, like brown rice could send your blood sugar super high.
It's 40 grams of carbs, a half a cup.
And, you know, you may have some revelations about, you know, what the foods that you thought were okay are doing to you. Or what that breakfast, for example, is doing to you.
Right. George, if you do have a regular old glucose monitor...
Finger stick?
He probably doesn't at an A1C of 5.7. But in case you do, do a finger stick 2 hours after that breakfast.
Mm-hmm.
That's it, 2 hours.
Yeah. And then experiment with different compositions and see if it doesn't...
Compare that to a three-egg omelet with some vegetables there or a side salad with it, if you wish,
and,
or something.
You know, the idea being is that fat... kind of slows the release of the sugar.
Yeah.
We actually had this as a question on my radio show the other day. It was a good question. Somebody said, what's better, sugar or sugar plus fat? Trick question. What would you say? What would be your answer?
What's better, sugar? It's sugar plus fat.
See, it's
glycemic load.
I answered differently.
Ah.
I said that sugar plus fat is a double whammy.
Ah.
And it really is sort of the basis for our SAD, our standard American diet, is that that combination of flavors induces people to overeat and become obese.
Now,
so it's sort of like the...
In a very processed food, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that, you know, like a Krispy Kreme donut is the perfect combination of fat and sugar. And it's just a calorie bomb. And it's super palatable and delicious. Mm-hmm. So another way to look at it is, what's the difference between sorbet and Häagen-Dazs ice cream?
Well, right.
Häagen-Dazs like
is
premium
lower on Häagen-Dazs. It's going to be lower on the glycemic index.
But it's super caloric.
It's true.
It's super caloric.
It's true.
So, you know, I think the message I was trying to get across is, you know,
also depend on the portion, too. I mean,
we're talking about that fat is okay and saturated fat is okay. We're exonerating it. But the fly in the ointment is that in order to have a successful diet to keep your blood sugar under control, you have to eat kind of Atkins-like, really almost on a keto diet.
Yes.
With fat as your fuel and almost no carbs. And when you add above a threshold of a certain level of carbohydrates to a high-fat diet, it's a highly pro-inflammatory obesogenic diet.
Absolutely.
So that, look. That question could be debated. You know, I could see like...
That question needs a context.
It needs a context.
It needs a context.
But I could see like a debate society around that question. You know, but you answered it in the way that caller called in intended it.
He
was trying to say, well...
It's like asking which is better, a plain baked potato or a baked potato with butter. My answer is the baked potato with butter. You lower the glycemic load of it. If you're... One of the worst things we can eat... says even Dr. Walter Willett of Harvard, is a plain bagel with jam on it.
Mm-hmm.
At least put cream cheese on it first to lower the glycemic load of it, if you're going to eat that.
Or a corollary to that is
half
the baked potato with butter.
There you go.
Because you're going to get less carbs and you're going to get more satiety from the fat.
Exactly.
You know? And because you eat the baked potato and a half an hour later, it's like, What's next?
I want more.
Right. What's for dessert? My blood sugars went up and then went down,
right.
And like, oh, I'm crashing and I need a fix.
Exactly.
My sugar fix.
Exactly.
Okay. Anyway, so that question, thank you.
Thank you, George.
Let's pause now because we have come to the end of part one. Mm. We divide our podcast into two parts. So in part two, give us a preview of what we're going to talk about.
Oh, wow. Do I really want to take a PCSK9 inhibitor?
Whoa. Okay. Well, we're going to
Everybody's asking, what?
Say what? Alphabet soup? Okay. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and it's our weekly Q&A with Layla. We'll be right back with more questions. Radio program at AOL.com is the destination for questions.